Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
So glad that you are here at The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. Being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at advertageage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. We always promise you a great show, as we have since 2001, and today is no exception. Matt Zucker is our special guest today. Matt is the executive creative director of Ogilvy One out of New York, and we'll be talking to Matt for a few segments here. We've also got, you know, with Jean Bliss's brand new book, one of her features is Custom Ink. That's a company, and customer love, and how they kind of tie those two things together. Her book, Brad, is just all about love and community, and why can't we all get along, kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I love you more than my dog is a pretty out there
poignant
title.
Statement.
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
We all love our dogs because they give us unconditional love. I don't know any clients that give me unconditional love. Do you?
Yeah.
Good. Send them my way.
I think I would, as a matter of fact.
You know, it's. I'm looking forward to today's interview, Ray. Matt, you know, he's known as the David Ogilvy of the digital world. In fact, I just made that up, so we're going to coin that.
You just made that up? Okay, that's wonderful.
Yeah. But, you know, Playboy CEO Scott Flanders says that he plans to seek new revenues from product licensing and nightclubs. New Playboy clubs will be opening around the world for the next few years.
That's cool.
Meanwhile, Playboy magazine may see drastic cuts in frequency, circulation, and pages. But I don't know about you, Ray. I thought the Playboy bunny icon was already on everything. So did we miss something in the licensing revenue model there? What's going on here?
I don't know, but I think it's real interesting that they're thinking about reopening those two. And how old is Hugh Hefner now? Isn't he like 128 or something like that?
Well, he's so old that his daughter has already retired as CEO of Playboy Enterprises, and now we got this guy. So,
Now, there's a brand, and this is interesting. I'm going to say this about Hugh and the fact that, you know, he is a part of the brand, but the Playboy brand is its own brand. Yeah. But here's a brand that seems to be having trouble holding on to its identity, and that is the Wendy's restaurant chain. Ever since Dave Thomas died, they have been going round and round and round and round trying to figure out what the heck to do, because it was not about the community of Wendy's. It was all about Dave Thomas. And, you know, they've tried a whole bunch of different things. They basically 5 marketing campaigns in about 5 years. Wendy's launched a high-stakes ad blitz aimed at revitalizing the brand by stressing freshness and quality. Well, come on. Freshness and quality?
Yeah.
That was never, in my mind, all about Wendy's when you down a Frosty in one of their huge burgers. Square burgers, yeah. And those were really good. They had the chili and everything like that. By the way, you can order off the menu at Wendy's. You have to ask for this. God help you if you actually ate it. I think it's called the meat block or the meat brick.
I saw that on TV.
It's either 3 or 4 square.
I guess 4.
4. Yeah. And of course you want to add all the other accoutrements to go with that. And then after that, you get a free trip to the hospital.
Yeah, that little segment, I think it was on the Today Show, of fast food items you can order off the menu.
Exactly.
You have to know about it.
You have to know about it. Well, Starbucks has one, too. If you want to try some coffee, instead of paying the full-blown load, you get it for a little bit less, but you can try stuff. It's a kitty cup, so to speak. But I
know
it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the Wendy's thing that you're talking about there, Ray. You know, they tried to animate Dave as a spokesperson, which, you know, you and I talked about many years ago here on the show, and we thought it was a mistake that for them to try to do that. And of course, they put the hook on that, and as you pointed out, have tried 5 different approaches, and you know, I think they probably missed the boat in not getting Orville Redenbacher to do some old spot. Yeah, I think Orville. I don't know. They had a similar problem with him trying to bring him back and do old spots, and they did that for a while. Remember,
featuring. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, whenever you have an icon that passes away, I think you move to a new idea and just go back to your product value proposition and get into the head of the consumer, what makes them come to your store anyway, and help promote that in a way that makes sense back to the consumer rather than trying to get tricky with it.
And I certainly don't think that freshness and quality equates to the Wendy's brand. It's something different there, and it seems they've got to get below the surface a little bit more. It just baffles me that that hasn't happened yet. 5 years and you haven't figured it out yet? Jeez. Gene Bliss got the new book out, I Love You More Than My Dog. Custom Ink and Customer Love is what today's feature is all about.
Welcome to the Customer Experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Custom Ink prints T-shirts for well over 100,000 groups and families per year. Each order is assigned a designer who personally reviews and inspects each shirt because, let's face it, there's nothing worse than having your typing error printed on 1,000 T-shirts. Custom Ink doesn't want potential customers to take their word for the fact that they deliver this kind of service. They want their customers to speak for them. So whenever a customer types in as his or her post-purchase online feedback, it appears word for word on the front page of their website. And in this case, to show the authenticity of the comments, customers' typos stay. This brave decision to bear customer feedback has fueled significant double-digit growth every year since its inception. The company has quadrupled in revenue from $13.5 million in 2004 to $60 million in revenue in 2008. And this growth is largely organic, driven by customer love and with no backing of venture capital. Consider giving your customers a forum to connect and convince each other to become your customers. It does take trust in your customers' words, but it is a powerful way to drive accountability in resolving issues.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
That's some good advice from Gene Bliss here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. Go get the book, okay? Matt Zucker is the Executive Creative Director of Ogilvy One New York. Matt recently returned there to help evolve the direct and CRM creative model for the digital world. It's time. I'm glad he's there. He's invigorated by the challenge to reinterpret David Ogilvy's secret weapon for the modern marketing environment while working with its fully integrated 360 brand teams. Matt first joined in 99 as an associate creative director on Ameritrade and WebMD. He rose through the ranks to become senior partner, group creative director, leading all direct marketing, demand generation and relationship marketing for Cisco Systems and the CRM for Enfamil, as well as digital duties for WebMD, the Office of National Drug Counsel Policy as well. Matt left in 05 to join RG&A as an executive creative director to lead Subaru and J&J business, launching Baby.com and guiding AccuView, Clean & Clear, Splenda, Johnson's Baby, and other brands as well. He must have had a trailer hitch on the car there. He then moved to Agency.com, where he was an ECD of its New York office for the past couple of years. At agency.com, Matt helped it lead a turnaround at the New York office and the agency. His creative work helped grow the agency's business with such clients as CIT and Mars, and gain new business from SPX Corp, LG Electronics, and Jackson Hewitt. Matt has won a clutch of major industry awards, and he carries them in the trailer, including Addies, Effies, New York Festivals, Ad Tech, and then the list goes on and on. So he's from Cornell. He's a good guy. And we've got Matt coming up here, right now here at the Advertising Show, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, being powered by Shipple.com and an ad platform called Tendency. Check it out at S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. Ed and his crew do a great job for us and a whole bunch of other businesses. So hope you're going to stick around. If you don't do that, you're going to miss something great here.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
Stronger than dirt.
Back with you here with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe, a gentleman who's, I think he was told as a young boy that he was ADHD, now he's ECD, which is wonderful. No, I'm just joking, Matt. Matt Zucker is Executive Creative Director of Ogilvy One New York, and as you heard, all of the wonderful things that he's done throughout his career. Matt, it's great to have you here at the Advertising Show. Welcome.
Thanks so much, fellas.
Yeah, our pleasure, Matt. You came to us and through Ad Age CMO strategy article that we noticed several months ago, which appeared, I guess it was last summer. It's titled "How Digital Marketing Can Reinvent Direct Marketing." First off, my question is, well, let me set it up first. You say that direct marketing remains stuck in the limits of a one-to-one model created and perfected for a previous age. So my question to you, Matt, is if direct marketing is so last century, why in the hell is my mailbox still full of junk mail?
I know, and it is pretty incredible. I guess the point is that direct did all these amazing things and set up a system so well that it stopped kind of growing and evolving, or at least that's the thesis. Meanwhile, things like digital kind of were all experimental, kind of grew up and got more and more interesting. So really the opportunity is to take a fresh look at direct marketing. And I think a lot of people are trying to do this to figure out what about it in the digital age could get much more exciting. What is missing? Where is it stuck? And what is worth keeping? And what is worth building on? And we're starting to find a bunch of those things.
You know, it's a great time to be in direct marketing, I would think, but you're also a consumer, as we all are, and you see what goes on out there. What's your sense of just the market in general? Are people in that industry transitioning to a more sophisticated approach to direct marketing, or do many seem to be stuck in the past?
I think what happened was that it just stopped getting interesting, and I think so it kept doing what it was doing really, really well, and we're kind of thinking of it as direct marketing works so well because the systems are so pat and people really know what works and what doesn't, and it's become a little bit of a liability. We're calling it like a prisoner of the proven, and it just has an opportunity to get more interesting, just like digital did, just like advertising has kind of, you know, hijacked brand, and digital has kind of become more experiential and more experimental. So really the opportunity for direct, this is a fantastic time to be in direct marketing. It's where a lot of the substantial marketing is going on, and building relationships with customers and helping them make choices is a great time. It just needs a lot more love and attention and probably a lot more creativity.
Give us a checklist of your thoughts or your identifiable components, if you will, on how direct marketing seems to be reinventing itself these days.
I guess the most obvious thing that most people are talking about is how so much has gone digital. So much direct mail has become email. So much kind of message boards have kind of replaced a lot of different kinds of customer support help. People can kind of help each other now. Brands are still doing mail. I mean, there's nothing wrong with direct mail. TV is becoming a lot more video. You're seeing a lot more longer form content. You know, the infomercial of TV is also becoming the infomercial online, you know, long form video split up into chapters that can be shared with people. So I think there's a lot of good parallels just that have become digital. So that's one. Another is creativity about what works. And to me, the opportunity is to put a lot more creativity back in to direct marketing, because just because you know what works doesn't mean it's what's best for the brand or what's really best for the customer or helps you stand out. I mean, your mailbox is cluttered with a lot of probably offers of the same type from all different companies. It's like they're not even listening to each other. They're not really trying to stand out from each other.
Right.
Well, I was going to go, you know, you bring up an interesting point. How often when you bring a new client in, do they come to you and say, look, we have, you know, data here that verifies that these approaches have worked for us, and yet you look at the approach and you know that there's a better way to do it, and in some cases it's almost embarrassing. We've all had situations where the execution creatively, and that's your area, of course, can be so much improved upon, but yet clients are a bit hesitant, or they're erring to the to the conservative side in spite of an execution that really doesn't put the brand in its best light, if you will. What do you do in a situation like that? I assume you've had this experience before.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I haven't seen a lot as much resistance as more. Clients are mostly stressed out over what to do with all these new opportunities. What do you do as a direct marketer in social networks and in social communities? How do you harness the dialogue that's going on, and how do you answer it? How do you keep people interested in your brand when they don't just want to be in your email, you know, the database just from getting their email? They want to be out there. So what do you create? And the volumes of what have to be created now is many more times of what had to be made before. I mean, there's many more channels. There's much more content to make. In terms of trying new ideas and if they're resistant to change, I mean, it's the easiest way I find to sell in new ideas is encourage what they already want to do, and that's encouraging testing of a new idea. So take a risk. Try this bolder idea next to the one that seems to work, and let's see what happens. And I haven't really had clients be that resistant to it. They also have a lot of the clients have a lot of pressure from their own organizations about tying more of the direct marketing in with the brand. For a long time, direct marketing could operate in this kind of silo over here, so they could do whatever it takes to make it work, regardless of whether it hurt or helped the brand. It could be the tackiest thing in the world, but it didn't matter because it worked. Now, in a world in which everybody sees everything, so whatever you get in the mail, everyone will see. You know, where online targeting, everyone sees everything out there. That you can't really do that anymore, and the silo thing doesn't work. And I think every brand manager and knows that. So there's a lot more pressure to be more on brand and to try more interesting things.
On the show today, here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, it is the executive creative director of Ogilvy One New York. It's Matt Zucker, and we'll be back with more here in just a moment. Stay with us.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
You worked too hard, you ate too much, the cheesecake made you greedy. Let your aching head and stomach hear this message from Old Speedy. Alka-Seltzer, plop, plop, fizz.
Back with you with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. I'm in New York this weekend. Our special guest, Matt Zucker, is Executive Creative Director of Ogilvy One New York. Brad, maybe Matt could help the Wendy's brand out a little bit too. Anyway, I don't know. It might be tough though. Anyway, Matt, welcome back to the show. Good to have you here.
Thanks a lot.
The David Ogilvy of the digital world, I like to say, Matt Zucker. Hey, Matt, testing has always been a part of direct marketing, yet moving to the digital world, what's your true feelings being a creative guy about testing? Is it, you know, is there a place for it? Is there sometimes testing that is off cue or gives input that dissuades someone from a campaign that you know should work and it really isn't given an opportunity to perform? Do you want to get into your head on that?
Sure. And I don't want to use testing as a crutch. I think too many people want to waste a lot of time testing, I don't know, background color. I mean, that doesn't really interest me. I think we all did that in 99 and 2000, and we all sort of know where the button should go, and we know, I mean, there's a lot of things that are quite proven. So if you're going to test something, I would rather test, you know, ideas. The good thing is I like to test things in market. I really think, you know, you don't need to do focus groups anymore. Just create the work and put it out there. And if it doesn't work, you know, pull it. I don't think there's a big issue in it. I think speed is really important. So I would much rather take a big risk and get something into market and have something to work against it and learn from. You know, it's not just learn because it's about try things because you never know what's going to work. And then you want to be able to have a plan B, because what if, you know, a lot of people create stuff and they're not really prepared for their own success. I've done plenty of campaigns or different efforts, especially in the digital world, where, oh my, you know, thing went really well and we weren't even ready, or we ran out of money and we couldn't even follow up with our plan B. It was such a shame.
Yeah, really.
You know, your company, Ogilvy One Worldwide, do you guys offer your services to your sister agencies within the network?
Sure. Yeah, we work with everybody. We work with everyone from Ogilvy PR to, obviously, Ogilvy and Mather, our closest cousin. And we work with Eichhoff in Chicago, who's one of the most well-known DRTV agencies, and many others.
So, I mean, I'm just trying to get some clarification. Do you have a new business guy that goes out and acquires new business specifically for the firm, or is it more a service within the network? How does that work?
It works both ways. I mean, there's plenty of clients look to Ogilvy to kind of package up the whole story. So plenty of new business pitches are done, you know, with Ogilvy Action, with Ogilvy PR, with Ogilvy and Mather, and we kind of bring it all together, and it works pretty seamlessly. Other times, you know, there'll be just a piece of business that Ogilvy One will go after, or a unique opportunity. You know, but more and more we see plenty of clients who look to Ogilvy because, you know, for the whole 360 brand stewardship approach, that they kind of want it all.
Well, let's shift gears and talk about Direct Response TV. What are you guys doing for your clients to help DRTV evolve to what it can truly be today?
Yeah, it's really tricky, and I think that's the hardest thing to explore right now, because DRTV works so well for a reason on television, and it doesn't make a neat switch just to the web, because, you know, you can't always get the message out in 2 seconds, and people's patience online is different. So we're kind of looking at different ways to create DRTV or DRV, direct response video, that can be used online. But we're finding that sometimes the content of it isn't a perfect switch. So we're encouraging clients to kind of try out different things. And then, of course, you want it to also be interactive, so you want to be able to click to call or click to order right then and there.
Mm-hmm. Well, staying with that, let's talk a little bit about the idea of designing to be shareable. You know, I realize that you have a couple of examples of how companies can design and integrate digital components to become more shareable into their direct marketing strategy. Share with us some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's always funny because we spend so much time creating work that's one-to-one, that's, you know, for one person that we have in mind. And the truth is, if they love it that much, they're going to share it with people that they like. But we don't design most of our stuff to be that shareable. What's happened is more and more of digital has become easier to share within Facebook or to your Twitter feed. And you know, all the publishers and all the content publishers are making it easier to share articles on whichever platform you want to do that. So we would be well served if the content we create, any brand creates content, whether it's like a podcast series or, you know, an article or like a tool, you make up a tool, that you make it for small groups of people, because we see more and more people acting in these little groups, these little networks of their friends or people that all like, I don't know, antiques or comic books. So we should create not just in the one-to-one model, but in the one-to-few model. And I think you'll get a lot more bang for the buck. I mean, it's a little tricky because it's not as trackable, and it's not it doesn't work also so neatly. Everyone spends so much time, and that's what I was talking about, the prison of the proven, is we spend so much time making all these little neat charts where everything works so neatly, and the truth is the web's a mess, and it is a little more chaotic, so it's a little harder to develop communications programs that can get that messy, but you got to do it.
Matt Zucker is the executive creative director of Ogilvy One, New York. Matt dropped by the advertising show today. What a great thing to have happen. We'll be back with Matt and Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe here in just a moment.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kinds of kids eat Armor hot dogs?
Welcome back. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and the ECD at Ogilvy One New York is Matt Zucker. Matt, great to have you on the show today. Thanks for being here.
Sure, thanks.
You know, back to your CMO article, Matt, for a second. You also note that direct marketing needs two significant transitions to survive these days, starting with the evolution of predictable one-way communication and transitioning to a looser and, I guess, more modern two-way dialogue platform. And you also talk about the reintroduction of creative vitality. We've touched on the creative vitality already. Are people not getting that it's not talking to your customers, but it's dialoguing with your customers today? I mean, that seems pretty obvious.
Yeah, I know, and I think people completely get it. I think they haven't figured out how to do it because they haven't figured out, you know, the manpower to kind of man the Twitter feed all night and day, and does the agency do it or the client do it, or they haven't figured out how to sustain their Facebook page, you know, beyond when the promotion's over. And it's a lot of it is a resource problem. And sometimes it's a volume problem, being able to produce enough stuff to keep things interesting. So I think the two-way dialogue thing everybody gets. They just haven't figured out how to resource it as an organization. Everyone's, you know, establishing listening posts. If they haven't, they're crazy. But I don't think they've figured out how to to engage with it.
Do you think that there are particular brands out there that should stay away from the social networking space? I ask that question of a lot of people in your space and others that have been successful in the social network platforms that are out there. And most of them say that, no, all products, all services are a valid opportunity for social networks. But I find that hard to believe.
Well, you know, social networks are just, you know, they're an area in which people engage and trade stuff and pick up applications and use them. So I can't imagine any brand that would not be able to use it in some way. I hear sometimes resistance about, oh, our brand's too complicated, or legal or compliance, or we're a healthcare brand. I mean, it's not. I think it's nonsense. I think it's that they just haven't figured out how to do it and how to do it right. I worked on baby formula for years, and there were plenty of things that we could and could not say, and when a question was asked, we had to kind of, you know, flip it to the right person to answer the health-related question about, you know, from the FDA, but you can do it. You just, I always find it a little lazy to not, you know, figure out what the barriers are, because people are engaged there, and why would you not want to be where your customers are and where they're asking questions? I think it's a little naive to kind of treat it like a trend or like an outside vehicle when it's not. It's really part of everyone's daily behavior.
Sure. Well, maybe I'm not asking the question exactly the way I feel about this, and that is, you know, in a black and white world, I guess you're right. I tend to think that there are certain products out there that lend themselves to leveraging social platforms. And when a consumer has more of an emotional connection with a product, that they're more apt to emote about their feelings about the product as opposed to buying a widget that is a non-emotional, you know, purchase.
Oh, sure. Like a low interest item, like a, well, candy bars are emotional, but if it was a paper towel, you know, I don't know what they would do. But
it's more of a challenge. I think it's more of a challenge. And your point is that even though it's more of a challenge, there's got to be something out there for you, right?
Yeah, probably to some degree, or maybe with somebody else. You know, if a paper towel brand doesn't need its own Facebook page, I don't know why you join it, but maybe they kind of line up with a bunch of other related brands around the home and do something around that.
Yeah. You know, I saw that you also had written another fairly recent article in the September issue of Advertising Age Digital Next special section called When Direct Marketing Becomes Misdirected Marketing. Can you give us a little bit of the highlights on that?
Yeah, I think I was really upset one day because I think I saw two different offers that one I got from my own bank. I think it was Citibank. Citibank sent me an email, and I've been a Citibank bank holder since 1992, and I've been a Citibank mortgage holder since like 2001. So it's kind of, you know, they had sent me a note saying if I open up a Citibank checking account, I will get, you know, $200 or something like that.
A toaster, yeah.
And I was like, this is crazy. How come they don't have the simple basic stuff in the database down to know who I am? But it was City Mortgage's list, and I was really furious. And then what I wanted to respond to say, by the way, don't send me that stuff. I am your customer. I am your loyal customer. Don't, you know, take me out of the list. I couldn't actually. I had to write a letter to internet and email services at City Mortgage, which is really funny. So I typed up a letter, and I mailed it in the, you know, at the post office. And I haven't heard back yet. I'll definitely do a post update when I hear back.
That's ridiculous.
It was so funny.
Gee, Matt, thinking of a different bank possibly? Hmm?
Yeah. No, and I love them. That's what kills me. And these were such innovators in the field. I mean, Citibank came out with direct access, or the earliest online service for banking. I mean, they're really amazing. This was really dumb.
Well, you're a very nice person, Matt, to say that. I appreciate that. We are unfortunately out of time here at the Advertising Show. Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth. Matt, congratulations, and continue to do great work because, for God's sakes, we need it, okay?
Thank you, Beth. Thank you,
all right. On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth. Back with more in just a minute.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
Another public service announcement from Brill Cream. Men, beware. Use one dab of Brill Cream. Just a little dab makes your hair look excitingly clean. Disturbingly healthy.
Thanks to today's special guest, Matt Zucker, for dropping by here at the Advertising Show. It's Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth. Shamin Abbas here in just a few minutes. We've got Shamin talking about if blogging is right for your business. Unless there's something really wrong for your business or with your business, blogging's not a bad idea. Time to get talking to your consumers. Hey, I pulled this out because I know we share a love of dogs and all that kind of good stuff. Mm-hmm. Milkbone is doing a, basically, it's called Pause for a Cause from Milkbone. One of the most popular tactics, this is Stuart Elliott, once again, New York Times, whereby companies seek to do well by doing good. Well, they should always do that. I mean, there's a company out there, Brad, that sells shoes, and every pair of shoes they sell, they give a pair away to a needy nation. And you know, yeah, it to me, it's just such a great sense of community, and I'm really surprised at the number of companies that don't do something like that. They expect us to contribute, but they give nothing back beyond giving people some jobs. For some time, Pedigree, which is sold by Mars, which makes you kind of wonder about that, has been promoting its support of pet adoption. Del Monte is making donations to an organization named Canine Assistance, the centerpiece of a campaign for the Milkbone line of treats, underlining the focus of the campaign, it's good to give. The double meaning is meant to convey that just as Milkbone is good to give to your dog, you can also get a warm and fuzzy if you give to good causes and you support those brands. It certainly would make me want to support a brand like Milkbone. And I applaud them for doing that. I think it's absolutely wonderful. So let's see more companies try and reach out and figure out beyond the doggone boardroom that maybe there's something out there that we could be doing to change the world. And I think companies would be surprised to see that there's a lot of opportunities there. What do you have?
Well, you know, staying with the dog theme, with your voice in the condition that it is today, Ray, you could be doing a animation voiceover for Ruff the dog. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just an idea I was having as I was hearing you speak there.
I could be on Scooby-Doo.
You could.
That'd be a good thing.
Mark Cuban, everybody knows who Mark is.
Mark has the largest TV in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
I imagine.
In his house, and I know the guy that put it in.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I can't imagine how big his remote control must be.
Bigger than
the,
yours.
The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission is pressing forward with its case against Mark Cuban after a federal court dismissed charges that he committed insider trading. And when the SEC decides they're going to continue with pressing, there's something to be said about that. I'm just saying allegedly, huh? Mm-hmm. The agency alleges that Cuban sold his stake in Mama.com in 2004 to avoid $750,000 in losses. So if this goes through, and time will tell, Mark could be going the way of Martha. Could be the Martha and Mark show here.
And he could watch it on his big TV, on court TV. It'll be wonderful.
Well, maybe by remote control.
Exactly.
Yeah, the big house.
Won't work. Shamin Abbas here now at the Advertising Show. Is blogging right for your business? Let's find out.
And now it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
Social media consultants and even your own agency colleagues want you to believe business blogging is a no-brainer. The reality is that blogging isn't really for everyone. Here's a checklist to see if your client or even your agency should be part of the blogosphere. Do you really want to do it? This isn't a short-term project. Once you start, you'll need to update regularly, at least once a week. Do you have the stamina? Do you have a topic in mind? Ideally, this topic should be conveyed easily in less than a dozen words displayed under your blog title. Pick a theme for your blog and make sure it doesn't duplicate what's already being said elsewhere. Be as distinctive as possible. Are you passionate about the topic? A great blog has personality, and that personality is a result of enthusiasm. Your topic must be something that you could go on and on about for hours, because that's it. In essence, that's what you'll be doing over time. Are you knowledgeable about the topic? While it's important to engage in dialogue and learn something from your readers and potential clients or consumers, you should have a strong point of view backed by expertise and experience that makes you a credible source. Do you communicate well? The fact is, some people don't, and a blog is not the place to practice that in a public forum. Being a good writer isn't a necessity. Many bloggers use video and sound to convey messages, but you do need to be able to express your thoughts with some coherence. And since blogging should look natural, as long as you can write a passable, decent sentence, you'll develop a style. Can you take criticism, sniping, and negative remarks? If you're opinionated enough to develop the blog to express your ideas, you will receive some criticism, negative feedback, and disagreement with your point of view. So never lose your cool.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional, with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
Thanks, Shamin, here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And I guess the bottom line here is if you are not communicating with your community or people who you want in your community, man, are you missing the bet? So some good advice there from Shamin. What do you have there, Brad, as we wrap stuff up?
Just to stay with what you were just talking about and what we heard Shamin talking about, it's all about a two-way street. It's not just talking at your customers or to your customers. It's dialoguing with your customers, and there are many digital platforms out there to do that. So if you're not engaging and communicating on a two-way level, you're missing it. And our guest today talked a little bit about that If you missed that, go back and listen to it again. We talked about Mark Cuban. Well, in keeping with lawsuits and legal matters, a New York court is dismissing a second lawsuit by the former anchor Dan Rather, filed against CBS Les Moonves, as well as CBS News head Andrew Hayward. The judge is dismissing Rather's renewed claim that he was fired. Are you ready for this, Ray? To appease former President Bush, they say.
Are you kidding?
That was his basis for the renewed claim, because he was claiming that he was fired to appease former President Bush. So,
oh, really?
Let's take it stranger. And hopefully Dan is just going to stay with Mark and the HDTV cable network and do his stuff. You know, you just wish people like Dan would go out on top and not have the... You know, he was tarnished enough when all that happened, and it's just adding to his own problems and his own image.
Yeah.
When he did stuff like this. So.
What a shame, because it really puts the focus on a big negative as he wraps up his life, wraps up his career.
He's a great journalist.
Yeah. So let go of the crap. You know that, Dan, stuff like that happens, and I mean, come on, let's be a big boy about this, huh? I guess that might be. I'm rather surprised that. You would hear something like that as well. So hopefully that all works out. Advertising Show, brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Listen online at adage.com. Come back next week. We'll be right here, all right? The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.